Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5,
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Or, perhaps today, president of the Joey Porter Fan Club. What do you think, huh? Think I could win?
You're not making t-shirts up, are you?
I love Joey Porter. How great is this? Could we have asked for anything better? Slow week. Let's get some moron to say, oh, the Patriots aren't all that.
It was only a matter of time with him.
He's like, you
can count on him to say something ridiculous, absurd,
he's like, yeah,
over the top.
Yeah, he's like death and taxes. It just keeps on coming.
Yeah,
and just you can't avoid it. And something is going to happen somewhere, somehow, some way. Thank you, Joey.
Well, and the thing with him, too, is you could almost expect it when he was with Pittsburgh because those were decent teams he was on.
Right.
They were playoff teams almost every year.
Right.
He's on a horrible team. Keep your mouth shut.
Well, here's the thing. By the way, welcome inside Patriots Playbook for Thursday. John Rook, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly here with us as well today. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, will join us in the second hour of the program today. I have to admit that when I first saw it last night, I guess it crossed when I saw ESPN.com had it last night, and I'm thinking, you know, We kind of got a manufactured chip on the shoulder because of the whole Brady thing and because of the whole disrespect thing. You know, the Patriots love to wear that mantra. We've seen a little of it earlier this week when the Patriots are still ranked very low in all the power polls, and we talked about that, all the power rankings earlier this week, how the Patriots haven't even cracked the top 10 in several of them, and they're the only 2-0 team that isn't in the top 10 right now in most of them. And so I asked Vic Carucci from NFL.com that question yesterday, and he said Patriots still have to show me something. Mm-hmm. You know, based on the snapshot that I see after 2 weeks, I'm not convinced that they're a playoff team. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. It's one man's opinion.
And you know, Vic last year had the Patriots number one
throughout the whole season.
Even like when they played Indianapolis.
Yep. It's true.
And all the tough games they faced.
So it's not like he's a Patriots hater.
Right.
So that's why I'm glad we had him on yesterday, because I respect Vic Carucci's opinion about as much as any man or any reporter that I know covering the NFL. I think the guy knows his stuff.
Yeah, and he's pretty even-handed.
And he's very even-handed. He's about, like I said, he has no agenda. A lot of the ESPN guys, you know, and you know that, yes. I know this, Eric, a lot of these ESPN guys, they're very knowledgeable football guys, but they have agendas, number one. And number two, when you're a former player you still have relations in certain cities where you used to play and you hear about it all the time,
right.
You got an agenda. Whether you say you do or not, you do.
Right. And it's difficult, especially when they're that so closely removed from it.
Absolutely.
It's not like Tom Jackson, who,
absolutely.
You know, he's from Cincinnati, but he played in Denver. And, you know, whenever Cincinnati or Denver come up, they rib him a little bit about it. But it's not like he's a homer for either one of those teams when he gives his analysis.
Right.
He's even-handed about it.
And when it comes to TJ, though, you know, when it comes to the Patriots, I mean, once he got burned by that whole they hate their coach thing a couple of years ago, you know he's had a bug up his rear end for the Patriots ever since.
He has, but you know what? Last week, I don't know if you saw Sunday NFL Countdown last week.
I only saw a little part of it. I did not see the part leading up to the Patriots.
He was adamantly against the Patriots winning that game.
That I knew.
He made a good case for their not winning a game, not winning that game. And, you know,
how did that work out for him, by the way?
Well, it didn't work out too well for him, but only one player, I think it was Keyshawn, only one member of that crew, even Berman, who, you know, Berman loves the Patriots. Picked the Jets to win the game. But Jackson was the most vociferous about the fact that he just felt that it wasn't going to be close, that the Jets were going to beat up on them.
What does that tell us? It tells us that even the quote unquote experts don't know everything. They just don't.
They don't. And a guy like Jackson, my point was, a guy like Jackson doesn't. I don't think he really has an agenda, as opposed to some of the other players who are a lot younger, closer to having retired than he is. And I don't know if that's a matter of
I could see where he would have less of an agenda because he's been more removed from the game for a few years. But I really believe, and knowing this as I do from several of the people who I've worked with at that network, he was burned by that whole thing. He felt like the network didn't back him up. And
he took too much heat for it?
He took a lot of heat for it, you know, from players in the game and out of the game. And so I kind of feel like, you know, I don't know how he can really be impartial like a journalist is supposed to be anyway. And that's the other thing. I mean, everybody, you know, you see all the ex-athletes, that have positions of authority and in terms of giving their analysis. There's no impartial. They don't know how to be impartial. They haven't been trained to be impartial. They're not reporters. Mm-hmm. They're athletes giving their opinion. So when you realize that they're not reporters, people who have been trained and gone through years of this kind of experience, you see an athlete, you know, he retires. Michael Strahan is a perfect example, all right?
Yeah.
He's retired. Fox snaps him up. Why? Because everybody knows that toothy, gap-toothed grin that he's got. That's why, because he's a personable guy.
He was always good with the media.
And he's always good with the media. Well, when it suited him, he had a bug up his rear end about a lot of media, too, including just last year. So let's keep this in mind that, you know, he has his job, and as well as most of the athletes have the job, not because they're great reporters, because they're known personalities who aren't afraid to give an opinion based on whatever slant they choose to give. It is not impartial. They have no journalistic training. So you have to understand, when a player says something, take it for what it is. It's one man's opinion. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's right, and it doesn't even, sadly, mean that that reporter, use that term loosely, that athlete, that ex-athlete, whatever, has done his research. Most of these guys don't. They shoot from the hip. And that's the sad part about it, that the networks still go out and they hire these guys even when they don't do their background. That's why I pay more attention to guys like Carucci, like Chris Mortensen, like Peter Gammons on baseball, and other guys who I know have been trained in this form and fashion.
David Aldridge for the NBA.
David Aldridge for the NBA. Absolutely. Very good. Ed Werder for the NFL. Yeah. He's another one, you know, that does his groundwork. He does his backup. He follows. And any of the reporters that ESPN have that aren't football players, ex-football players, I would take more seriously than a football player in their opinion.
I seem to get the feeling, though, and you might know better than I do, that TJ's a little bit different in that regard.
He's been more removed from the game for a while. Okay, I'll grant you that.
And so he's sort of developed some chops as far
I would say that
an analyst.
I would say that he has, because he's learned through the years that he's been with the network how to, you know, look at things impartially. He's seen others around him go about things journalistically. Pick up the phone and talk to somebody rather than just make a stupid opinion, you know? Unfortunately, that is exactly why he got burned by the whole Patriots thing. He got one phone call based on my knowledge of the situation, and I got this secondhanded, okay? So take it for what it's worth here, gang. But he got one phone call from one player in the Pats locker room who said, you know, oh, man, we're having a tough time with Coach B right now, basically, and I'm paraphrasing. But based on that one phone call, he said, oh, they, meaning the whole team, hate their coach. Now, that's not what you're supposed to do. In reporting, you have to get sometimes two and maybe even more sources from completely different ends that say the same thing before, in reality, you go with a story. Mm-hmm. You know, Eric, you may even remember this. Several years ago, I don't know if you remember this or not, but several years ago when I was in local television in Providence, I had, at the time, what I thought was a blockbuster of a story on a current Patriot player who was in rehab. And I got that story because it was someone who was in rehab with him. Mm-hmm. But I could never get it verified. I could never get anybody else to agree or disagree to it. And so the story died. And this kind of stuff happens all the time. All the time in this business. I can't tell you how many stories that I've wanted to go with but thought the better of it. Why? Because I didn't. Because I followed journalistic reporting principles here.
Well, unfortunately, John, I think nowadays too many people in this profession take the one source like you had.
Because they want to make a splash.
And run with it.
Yeah.
And they report rumors. Or they report anecdotes.
This is how
confirmation.
This is how blogs get started.
Right, exactly.
People put it on their blog.
Right, proliferation of blogs has a lot to do with that. The proliferation of the blog has a lot to do with that because now you have a forum where you can throw a rumor out there, and it's not technically journalism.
It's not.
It's a place to talk about rumors.
This is why the whole internet thing is a tough line to walk.
And it troubles me that so many so-called legitimate news sources look to blogs for news.
Right.
And then they take a rumor or a tidbit, and then they run with it without doing their own homework first. They cite the blogger. They cite that source.
They do. They absolutely do. How about the whole story of who's that you're playing? He's playing somebody in the background there, and I can't hear it. What is that? Somebody clue me in on the joke here.
I'll tell you later, John, when we're off the air.
Okay, thank you. All right, fair enough. So, where was I now? I was distracted momentarily. Oh, how about the whole John Tomasi thing, you know, from the Boston Herald? Perfect example. You know, he had what he thought was a credible source, but he didn't have anybody else except this one person, right? And then, of course, he does the whole story on, you know, the Spygate issue last year and the fact that, you know, the video had some information. I don't even remember all the details exactly of it last year. Fact is, though, it was proven to be dead wrong. And so he had to perform an ultimate mea culpa that ended up costing him his job as a beat reporter for this football team.
Well, yeah, and ironically, he still is acting as the beat reporter for the Herald.
He's not visible.
But he does come in pretty much every day, and he does cover that beat. The Herald is, you know, still looking to reshuffle over there, but so far it hasn't happened for reasons beyond his control, though.
Yeah, I suppose so. I just, you know, that's why, you know, no matter how much you want to go with the story, you have to follow principles. That's why the principles are in place to begin with. And to get back to the original point here is Joey Porter shooting off his mouth.
Right.
I wouldn't expect a player currently playing to go anywhere near those kind of standards. What you have to understand is that Joey, in his particular instance, he's shooting off his mouth because of probably partly because he's got that certain he wants to create some swagger for himself dating back to his Pittsburgh days. He wants people to know that, hey, I haven't gone anywhere. He's probably feeling buried in a place like Miami, which is pardon me, going to be horrible again this year. Mm-hmm. Feels like he has to stir some dust, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit.
Yeah, and he's just one of those guys. He's one of those players that has to draw attention to himself.
Yes, he's one of those guys that
regardless of what's around him.
That's exactly right. He absolutely has to. So,
and I have no use for players like that. However good they may be on the field, if they can back it up or not, I just have no use for guys who talk just for the sake of talking.
Yeah, they don't really. I mean, I don't understand what they think they're going to get out of it, because 9 times out of 10, maybe 19 times out of 20, it backfires on you. Why do they do this? Because it's all about attracting attention to themselves. Mm-hmm. And even if this blows up in their face and the Patriots, you know, kill them, he won't feel any worse about it. That's the kind of teammate you don't even want on your team,
no,
to be honest with you.
And you know what? Sadly, it's I think a lot of times a case of the guy just wanting people to know the name Joey Porter.
Probably.
Or whoever the player may be.
Yeah, you know? I guess he feels like, you know, at least bad publicity is better than no publicity in this particular instance.
And it might even be a little bit of a crutch for his own athletic ability, because he may not feel like he's as great a player. If he didn't make those kind of comments, would we talk about Joey Porter as much for what he does on the field?
Absolutely not. But now we're talking about him today.
Right.
Blogs all over the place are talking about him today.
Right.
Fans are talking about him today. Why? Because he opened up his big fat yap, you know, and he basically says, you know, hey, they're not all that. Brady's not around. So how can they possibly be any good?
And you get when a team like Miami is in a year where they're not very good and they have a player like a Porter who's average, I'd say. I wouldn't say he's anything better than that. But when you talk about the players that a team as bad as Miami has, you think of a Joey Porter because his name comes up so much because he talks so much,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily because he's out there making plays.
I guess this whole, you know, issue of bringing Joey up today, and I mean, how can we not talk about it? Because it's cannon fodder. It will just give the Patriots, if the players in the locker room are considering it at all, it's only going to give them more ammunition.
Well, it was also the first question that Matt Cassel was asked today.
Perfect.
At his press conference.
And he said?
He basically just said, he sort of played it off like, I didn't really hear what Joey said. I don't really pay attention to that. I mean, it's the typical Patriots line, which you'd expect. He's not going to feed the fire. And rightly so.
Which is what the Patriots have been taught to do.
And another reporter tried to follow it up and said, you know, so it looks like you're taking the high ground, Matt, basically. And he's like, well, yeah. I mean, what do you expect? It's the Patriots. They don't usually take the low road with Belichick's players. You know,
yes.
I mean, I didn't expect him to further that feud.
Right. It's very true. So, except
he'll do his talking on Sunday. I'll take it that step further. They may keep quiet in front of the media, but they internalize it. You know, they're human beings. They internalize it. They keep it in the back of their minds, and when they have a chance on game day to let their play do the talking, they do it. I mean, you saw it last year when who was that no-name safety, Anthony Smith from Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Who was running his mouth about into Gillette and being the pay. And when Gaffney and Moss scored their touchdowns, what did they do? They went right in. They went right into Anthony Smith's face and let him know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
true. But they did it on the field. They did it on the field. They didn't run their mouths all week, which is the right way to do it. But you said it best in the beginning, John. It's you couldn't have asked for anything better this week.
No, it's good. It's good, shall we say, bulletin board material. In that regard, which is why I kind of opened it up this way, Eric, today, was I wanted to know from the fans in particular what players, what personalities within the league do you kind of feel like are bombs waiting to go off? I mean, Joey Porter's a great example. Who else in the league is capable of doing this? Are there other Patriots opponents, as you look at the rest of the schedule, that you think are, you know, loose cannons?
They may only be a Patriots opponent in February, but, you know, I think T.O. is always one of those guys. Mm-hmm. The difference with him is that he actually can back it up on the field.
He may be one of about two or three guys in the entire league that can actually back up whatever he pops off with. And about where T.O. is concerned, I would give you that I think he's learned a little bit. I think he's matured a little bit. And it's kind of strange to say that because he's gone to a place in Dallas where, you know, they sort of embrace that rogue image a little bit. You know, that's why they've had some of the ones in there that they have. And even though he has not been DTO-ified, if I can, you know, use a new verb here, the fact is that he's not the same Terrell Owens as we saw in Philadelphia. He's not the same Terrell Owens that we saw in San Francisco, I don't think. I think he's dialed it down at least one notch from then. You wouldn't agree with that?
Well, you remember Get Your Popcorn Ready from last year?
Well, that was a good one. That's a line, actually. They actually had some, you know,
they're all good ones.
Pretty funny.
But then he had the whole thing with the taking the pills and you know the attempted suicide thing that was or wasn't, and I wouldn't say he's matured. I think he might have changed a little bit, but I don't know if mature is the word I'd use.
Okay, all right.
He may
not
have evolved somehow.
Evolved? Okay, yeah. That's probably a better word than matured. But
you got your voice back, by the way.
A little bit. Yeah, it's a little back. You know, it's, you know, for it took a week, right? Every once in a while.
You've lost the Barry White quality, though.
Thank you. Oh, now I need to have that back. I got to try to get that stuff back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How you doing, honey?
Sounds almost like a mix of Barry White and Elvis, doesn't it?
Mm.
So we have Joey Porter on the agenda, and he's spiced things up. How do you think his locker room really feels about this, especially when they're 0-2 and they're staring, you know, 1-15 or worse, you know, staring into the abyss again? Here's a team that really could use, I mean, you got a new coach, you got, you know, new GM, you got a lot of new players, you got younger players, you're trying to get more physical, you're trying to get stronger, and yet you still have a mouth that's yapping somewhere in the corner.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I think he's dealing with a young team, except for a guy like Pennington, who's been in the league, what, 8-9 years? I think a guy like Pennington would take issue with what Porter said. I think some of the younger guys might, you know, I mean, because Porter can be kind of an intimidating guy. He's big, he's physical, he'll get in your face. You know, even off the field, we saw he's had some incidents with other players around the league. There was a thing in Vegas, I think, where he punched a guy from the Bengals a couple of years ago outside a casino or something like that. So he's the kind of guy that if you say something to him, you might have to expect something physical in return. So I think some of the younger guys might not want to speak up and say anything because A, they're young guys, and B, they're on a team where there's really not much of a leader to speak of. I think Pennington might by default fall into that category, and I think someone like him might take issue with what Porter said. But, you know, their first round pick this year is an offensive lineman, and, you know, last year's pick, Ted Ginn Jr., wide receiver, young guy. I don't know. That's. I don't really see where he's going to get the pushback unless he gets it from up above.
Right.
You know, unless like Parcells, if Parcells were the coach, I think you wouldn't have heard reporter say those kind of things.
Or he would have squashed it
Or he would have squashed it pretty quickly.
Yeah. How much do you think it's Joey Porter kind of testing the mettle of the new coach?
That's a possibility. I think it's a possibility.
I mean, here's a guy who's been a lifer of an assistant getting an opportunity here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Parcells sees enough in him to give him the chance to be a head coach in this particular instance.
Yeah.
And here's Joey Porter, mouthing off, thinking that, hey, I can get away with this because, Sperano ain't all that.
Well, so. I think Porter's got his work cut out for him. Sperano's a no-nonsense kind of guy. He's you wouldn't know by looking at him. He's kind of short and
mm-hmm.
stout, but
right.
he's a fiery guy, and he doesn't take anything from anybody. And I kind of say that a little bit from having known the guy. He was, when I was at BU, he was the offensive coordinator there.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, and also the O-line coach. Mm-hmm. And believe me, he had guys who were at least a foot taller than him, and he used to shout and yell and get in their face. He's not afraid of anybody. Joey Porter's not going to intimidate him.
Interesting.
So I think if he's trying to test his coach, he's barking up the wrong tree.
Mm-hmm.
That's the advice I'd give to him. If that's what he's trying to do, I would say don't do it.
Interesting take. Maybe he's also just trying to attract attention. He's trying to fire up his own team. Maybe he feels like, he needs to get everybody's guard up a little bit because now they know the Patriots are going to be bringing it. I mean, as warped as that sounds, maybe he's doing this for his own team's benefit.
Try to inject a little confidence into the younger
guys. A little confidence, maybe a little excitement, maybe a little sense of urgency. I mean, I'll take all of that in consideration.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I could see where – I don't know if he's this smart, to be honest with you. I don't know if he's this brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see where, a veteran player who's clearly on the downside of his career, who still feels like he has a little left in the tank, he's seeing the season dwindle away next to nothing after 2 weeks. I got to do something here. I'm already perceived as being a numbskull out there. It's time for me to open my yap and play the role, with quotations around the word role,
mm-hmm.
and let me open up my yap, and then I'll put guys on the defensive run here, and then they'll have to scratch and claw because their backs are going to be to the wall because I'm going to open my mouth and put their backs against the wall. You think he's that brilliant?
No, because I think if he were that brilliant, he would have signed with a team that can actually compete for a Super Bowl.
But then again, nobody ever said that, hey, it's all about money, right? And so if he got the money opportunity with Miami, that's why he went.
Yeah, I think his lack of choices probably spoke to what other teams around the league thought of his services, too. And I think he took the money where he knew he could get it.
And he got it at Miami.
And he got it in Miami.
This is what he's getting in return.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. If you have some thoughts on Joey Porter, if you have some thoughts on some of the other likely loose wires, loose cannons around the NFL, we'd love to hear from you. This being Thursday, it's prediction day as well. The guys, of course, at PFW went through all of their game predictions earlier today. If you have your thoughts on the score for this Sunday with Miami.
I was pretty close last week, John. I said 23-13.
You did.
I was off by 4 points on the New England end and 3 points on the
Jets. 20-13, so I was close.
You're pretty close, too.
I was close. I haven't, until just now, I have not even thought about the score for this week's game. Not yet. Did you give your score during the picks?
I usually don't do that. I usually give, my spread.
Did you have the Patriots covering the 12.5?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
This may be one of the few times that the Patriots cover a double-digit spread this year, to be honest with you. If they even get any more. Based on what happens from here on out.
Well, I think there's a chance they get some more.
Okay.
There are a couple of bad teams on the horizon that they can go, especially out west.
Yeah, and we've been talking all week how, this schedule, such as it is going to play right into the Patriots' hands. If there was ever a year for this team to play a schedule that was not as solid as other years in the past, this would be the
mm-hmm.
one. It'll allow, hopefully, Matt to, grow at his own pace.
Right. Yeah.
For the Patriots to kind of nurture him, bring him along, to gain some confidence, for this team to slowly build. I mean, it's kind of funny. There's an interesting paradox here because in the preseason, Randy Moss was one of the ones, and then, of course, Tom Brady said it as well, one of the ones saying that he thought that the offense was way ahead at this stage this year than where they were last year. And, of course, we know what happened last year. And maybe it's in terms of learning, but they have yet to really put that learning to use on the field. We haven't seen it yet. Of course, we'll never see it where Tom's concerned.
Mm.
So now you are taking a bit of a step back. Having to take
a little bit,
maybe a step back in order to hopefully take two steps forward
mm-hmm.
on down the line. We would like to see one step forward first.
Yep.
And then, and I would consider that probably being a little bit better prepared in the red zone because that's where the offense has come up short, at least in the first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Where the defense has improved in the red zone, the offense has not. And to me, that's the one glaring area right now that, as far as my being a reporter covering this team, that's where the Patriots have to show me.
Yep.
And that was one of the areas that Vic Carucci mentioned to us here on the program yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He's also not convinced that the Patriots' defense is set up for the long haul. He doesn't think so.
Oh, and what was his reason?
Just pretty much, I think he's still concerned with the age and the ability of some of the linebackers and certainly in the defensive backfield. Doesn't know that if they're going to be able to stand the test of time.
Wow. I disagree with Vic. I think the front seven is the strength of the team right now.
Right now it is.
Yeah.
Right now it is. In fact, the front seven is everything on that defense. It's going to help.
Of the team.
We have to hope that front seven continues to allow the back four to improve.
Well, so far, yeah. And
you have a great secondary when you have a fierce pass rush.
Sure.
When you don't have a fierce pass rush,
sure,
your secondary stinks.
Sure.
It's just the way it is with every team. I don't care how talented you are, because these receivers are so talented in this game. There's just nobody that can really stay on one-on-one with any of these receivers.
A couple of good signs, though, that I'm seeing early. Mike Vrabel already has 2 sacks.
Yep, good sign.
Adalys Thomas has 1.5 sacks, maybe. Richard Seymour has 1 sack.
Mm-hmm.
We're only going into week 3.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are already ahead of pace for what they did last year.
Fair enough.
Ty Warren, from what I've seen, is playing a
he's
beast.
Playing,
he's not getting he's numbers as far as tackles.
No, but he's been a beast inside
breaking
physically,
up
yes.
Plays
he's
in the
busting
backfield.
He's plays up in the
he's
backfield.
He's forcing running
yeah.
backs to go one side or the other away from
you.
Him.
Ty Warren may be at his best right now that he has ever been.
He could be. Vince Wilfork is coming off an Pro Bowl season and doesn't look to
the
be.
The Patriots' front three is as formidable as you will find anywhere in the NFL.
It is. And Thomas and Vrabel are where they are most comfortable, which is on the edge rushing, not on the inside mm-hmm. stuffing the run. And you can see they're already making plays now.
The sack last week of Favre with little Mr. Washington.
One of the best sacks I've ever seen.
Yeah, that'll be on highlight reels for the rest of this season.
Absolutely.
That will be one of those highlights that you see that will help define 2008.
Oh, without question.
That was, and so what we hope to see now are more opportunities, for Thomas and for Vrabel, being the edge rushers, if you will, to be able to make plays like that. And they're going to be able to make plays like that if the front three can continue to clog up the middle
mm-hmm.
and the guys in the secondary can continue to improve and at least hang step for step with the receivers in that 5 to 10 yard area.
Well, you bring up a good point. I thought for the most part my observation was Sunday that the corners, especially Hobbs, played tighter coverage than they have been
right
in throughout the preseason and even last year.
That's
going
as
back
good
to
as,
last year.
Eric, that's as good as Ellis Hobbs has looked since he's been here in New England.
Yeah, and I think he kind of said it either earlier this week or after the game that he really feels healthy mm-hmm. again this year, and he put a lot of the onus on that last year, his not having being 100% all
right.
season. But he clearly was taking more chances in the Jets game. He was getting closer to the line of scrimmage. Now, Favre doing what he does when a play breaks down and he runs around and he finds a guy for a first down on a busted play,
mm-hmm.
you can't really excuse it because you are supposed to stick with your man when you're in man coverage, but that's what Favre does, and that's how he makes plays. But on the plays where he just dropped back in the pocket and was firing, I liked what I saw. I liked that the corners were playing tighter coverage, and I think that's they'll need that in addition to the front seven getting pressure on whatever quarterback they have to go up against.
Right. All right, let's take a timeout here, and then we're going to come back, and we'll start looking at some emails. Got a couple other stories that I want to share with you, some news that's being made today in the league that certainly will directly affect the Patriots and their players and their potential actions on the field. This also directly, I think, and it probably intended for it to indirectly affect, but it directly affects the Patriots in the aftermath of Tom Brady's injury. So I want to bring that up with you as well. Don't forget your emails. Email us in your score prediction for Sunday, webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number, if you want to join the conversation with Eric Scalavino of PFW and myself, it's 508-543-7482. It's a Thursday right here inside the playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar. Bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Dumoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
We continue with Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. John Rook with Eric Scalavino of PFW. Russell Baxter from ESPN will be joining us here in approximately 10 minutes, so you want to stay tuned for that as we not only look at the Patriots and Dolphins, but we'll look at the entire Week 3 schedule around the NFL. At least pick up the key games. We don't go around the league, per se. We hit some of the key games, and certainly the games that affect the Patriots or could affect the Patriots on down the line. We look at next week's opponent. We look at divisional opponents, things like that, and other big games around the league very briefly. He gives us his thoughts on them. By the way, I'd be remiss if I did not say this at this stage of the game, because it's been sort of tucked under the carpet this week, you know, under the rug a little bit this week with everything that's gone on with, you know, reacting about Matt Castle and, you know, the all the other news that's been going on, and then Joey Porter opening up his mouth and all that kind of stuff. Last week's game that Steve Gostkowski had for the Patriots was almost, may have been one of the single most impressive kicking performances that I've seen in a long time by anybody. And not so much because he went 4-for-4 kicking field goals, which is great. Every kickoff was in the end zone, and only one was returned, and the one that was returned was still 5 yards deep into the end zone. The field position game last week was an absolute rout by the Patriots.
Actually, John, I think I have to correct you. I don't think every kick went into the end zone. There were two of them that went out the back
of the end zone. Out of the back of the end zone, that's true.
On the first
hop. I know
hop.
From experience, dude.
Good job, Two Gender. yeah, you're right. No, he talked about it a little bit this week, too. It was a combination of his feeling good physically and the weather conditions being just perfect for kicking the ball. There was a slight breeze that would come in and out. You know the winds in Giants Stadium are kind of weird, and they
swirly,
had that one tunnel that comes in.
Right.
Particularly when he had his back to that tunnel, the ball was just sailing, and he didn't really have to do anything. A little bit of a line drive in some cases, but I think he was doing that on purpose to take advantage of the wind and try to get some extra yardage out of it, and it worked.
How great is that, though, to be able to back a team up like that where they can't start any better than their 20-yard line? I mean, that's a great weapon. It's an undervalued weapon.
Very much so, especially when, you know, the Jets have historically, well, Justin Miller's hurt, but historically they've had a decent return game. And to keep them, to just make that null and void instantly is underrated. And I think Jets averaged the 21-yard line for their field position for the game. New England averaged their own 42. So they doubled the Jets' average starting field position, And you saw the result. That shorter drives, more
shorter
points.
Shorter drives, more points.
Makes it easier on Castle in the offense.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. The story that I wanted to bring up, at least initially, this was put out by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell earlier today. He's followed up the suspension of Bucks of the Bucks cornerback, Albert Mack, for his helmet-to-helmet hit on Matt Ryan last week. And I think this... Well, certainly it affects all players because he's kind of putting them on notice. But this also goes back to the whole Brady thing of 2 weeks ago. He has issued re-emphasizing safety issues and warning now that even first-time offenders are going to be subject to discipline. His quote is, "From this point forward, you should be clear on the following point. Any conduct that unnecessarily risks the safety of other players has no role in the game of football and will be disciplined at increased levels, including on a first offense." This is a memo that Goodell wrote to all teams, asking them to distribute it to all players on their team, and the Associated Press got a copy of it today. His quote continued, "Playing by the rules shows respect for your fellow players. No one wants to see unnecessary injuries."
Yeah, I think that directly harkens back to 2 weeks ago.
Of course it does. It absolutely does. Now, I think we all agree that, you know, football is violent, it's physical. Things like what happened to Tom Brady. And emotional. And things like that are going to happen. But if you're going to fine and or suspend players, a la how you fined a guy like Vince Wilfork last year, and you're not going to do the same for what happened to Tom Brady in relatively similar circumstances. I mean, a player basically getting blocked into. And when we saw, help me with the guy who tackled Brady.
Bernard Pollard.
Thank you, Bernard Pollard. I couldn't come up with Bernard for a second. Bernard Pollard, you know, he clearly reached and grabbed for the legs. If you're going to reach and grab for the legs, you need to be held accountable. And I'm thinking that's part of what the message is here by Commissioner Goodell today.
Are you surprised that there weren't any repercussions from the league?
Mildly, yes, because you're talking about your reigning MVP. And I would say that if it were Peyton Manning. I would say that if it were Eli Manning. I would say that if it were any elite player. Now, I'm not saying there should be a caste system here where the elite players are treated differently than others, okay? I don't think that we need to go that far. But at the same time, what I'm saying is you need to be consistent with your punishment that you mete out to players. If you're not going to punish players, then don't punish anybody. Don't punish Vince last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then consider it the heat of battle. It was just an unfortunate happenstance. Okay? And move on with it. But if you're going to mete out punishment, then you got to be consistent mm-hmm. with it. And I don't believe the NFL has been consistent with it. And so maybe this is addressing this issue as well. He's putting the players on notice right now. If you do something that is deemed, quote-unquote, unnecessary, and I think that's a really big envelope here.
Unnecessary
can encompass a lot of things. If you do something that's deemed unnecessary, you will be held accountable, is what he's saying.
But,
so it's going to put a little bit of a bug in the back of most guys' minds, I think, if they're on the ground and they're reaching for somebody's legs.
Wouldn't this have had added influence, though, if Pollard had gotten something? A reprimand,
oh,
a warning, a fine?
Yeah, he should have gotten something. Something should have been put in his quote-unquote file. You know, I mean, whether it was just a warning or a reprimand or don't let it happen again, kid. You know, great hit, don't let it happen again. You know,
yeah.
But, I mean, something should have been done. And to me, as a fan, and I'm speaking to this strictly as a fan, not as a journalist here, as a Patriots mm-hmm. fan, I'm disappointed in the National Football League for not at least saying something. I didn't expect him to be fined. I certainly did not expect him to be suspended. I didn't think the hit or the play warranted that when I look at it from a pure football perspective.
Not a suspension, but I thought a fine might have been in order, especially having,
you know what, a $5,000 fine or a $7,500 fine would have been just said, hey, don't let it happen again type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a slap on the wrist for guys, not even. I mean, it's nothing for most of these guys. I don't know about Bernard Pollard. I don't know what his contract says, but fact is that if you'd just given him something, I think it would have showed that the NFL is trying to be even-handed. And I think the NFL brought this on themselves by creating this kind of caste system. They're not treating Pollard and Brady the same way as they treated Wilfork or any other play, or this one that Albert Mack went helmet-to-helmet on Matt Ryan last week. They're not treating the instances the same. They're treating each case as an individual, you know, case, which I guess in theory sounds right, but in reality it doesn't work that way. People treat hits and they treat plays differently based on the severity of the outcome.
Yeah, I just the Pollard thing, I know he was very apologetic as soon as it happened.
You think that saved him?
I don't know if it saved him, because Vince Wilfork was very apologetic after it happened. Not necessarily on the field, I don't think, but in the locker room afterwards and all that week, he actually reached out to Lossman last year and said he was sorry. Pollard, I think, did so. He claims on the field he said to Brady that he was sorry, but Brady was in such pain he wasn't really responsive. But then in the media, directly after the game, he said, you know, I didn't mean it. I went up to my coach right afterwards and said that I didn't mean it. I take him at his word that he didn't mean to hurt Brady. But I still think, as like you said, to be even-handed, I think you have to set the precedent and be consistent with it.
If you're going at somebody's legs, even if it's inadvertent,
right.
I do believe that something needs to be done. You can't at players' legs.
Next time you're going to think about it, maybe.
Before you do it.
Maybe.
Now, does that take the spontaneity out of the game?
I just think it's one other thing that you have to
conscious of. Well, now, if they've taken helmet-to-helmet contact out of the game, in particular this instance where Mack was suspended, he was also fined $5,000 for unnecessary roughness. Mm-hmm. He's going to miss a game this week, all right? That's for helmet-to-helmet contact, right?
Yep.
Why is that any more serious than going after some guy's legs?
And Matt Ryan's playing this week,
He is.
And Tom Brady's not, am I right?
Right.
Yeah.
Why is helmet-to-helmet more serious than going after somebody's legs, going below the knee?
I think maybe... I don't know if they're treating it as more serious, but I think there have been more instances of helmet-to-helmet hits than there have been quarterbacks going out for the season with the type of injury Brady had with that low hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think because there have been more instances of it and more guys having been fined or reprimanded or suspended for those types of hits, that is something that has become routine for players to think about now. Not going helmet to helmet when they make, so when it does happen, like in this case, it's so rare now that the league automatically has to say, well, you know, we obviously have to give this guy a fine. I think if the low hits to quarterbacks and injuring them becomes more prevalent, the NFL has to start fining or suspending guys for it to become commonplace, for it to become common knowledge among players that's something that they don't even have to think about anymore. It's more of a natural reaction. Oh, when I'm down low, I just can't go for the legs. Can't go for the legs.
No, you can't do it. Here's the other part of Commissioner Goodell's memo that really gets me. All right, I'm going to read this for you. It says, and he's speaking directly to Albert Mack in this particular instance. Your actions are of particular concern in light of the emphasis that our office has placed on developing and enforcing rules designed to protect players from injury, including concussions. The safety of our players is paramount to all of us in the NFL.
I'm floored, but I just wish it was...
It's a double standard.
Yeah,
it's an absolute double standard.
I wish we'd heard more about this last week.
No kidding. I agree. I think it's a double standard. If I'm the Patriots, I'm really upset with this. I'm like, where were you last week, Commish?
Yeah.
Where were you on Bernard Pollard? Where were you? Why is it taking now? We've lost. You've lost. Mm. Patriots can look at the NFL and say, you've lost your reigning MVP. Mm-hmm. That's not good for you as a league to have your best player, to have your most known player, one of your superstars. That's not good for business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not saying you got to put kid gloves on when it comes to treating Tom Brady. We're not saying that. But if you're going to, you know, take care of Matt Ryan, why aren't you taking care of Tom Brady? Is it because the legs aren't as important as the head? Is that what we're saying here?
Yeah.
See, I'm thinking so. I think that's exactly what they think. And I think that's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't understand it, John.
I don't get it.
I don't. I just don't understand
it. I don't get it. That's why I brought it up.
I think the whole thing is stupid. I agree with his actions in the Ryan situation. I just wish he had done something more last year.
He should have done something. Even if it was a letter of reprimand, says we're not going to fine you, we're not going to suspend you, but you need to watch what you do.
Yeah, okay. Send a memo to all teams.
Yes.
Just like this thing.
Yes, exactly.
I think at the very least it warranted that.
And we got nothing.
That we know of. I
love the conspiracy theory here. I'm a huge conspiracy theorist.
Are you?
Oh, absolutely.
X-Files?
Yeah.
X-Files.
I'm totally into the whole JFK conspiracy, you know, more than one shooter.
I'm with you on that one.
Okay. Here's the conspiracy thing. Because of Spygate last year, do you think Commissioner Goodell just isn't cutting the Patriots any slack because he's just pissed off at them?
No, I don't. I don't think that. because, you know, he knows what he's got with the Patriots. He knows that he knows he's
got
a.
You would think, right?
I think he knows what he's got. He's got a good thing here. He knows that this is a worldwide fan base. He knows that, like you said, they have one of, if not the most visible players in the league. He's the face of the NFL right now. I don't think he's taking it out on that because, you know, honestly, I think Spygate is in the past. I think everyone's
we're all kind of praying for
that. I think the league, I think the team, I think everyone, the fans, I think they've put that in the past. You know, there might be some fans of other teams who don't like the Patriots who would like to keep bringing it up. But I think for the most part on a league level, I think it's behind us. I think other coaches around the league, certainly when we were at the combine, coaches and GMs said, you know, the few times reporters tried to bring it up, they said, you know what, look, that's in the past. And that was 6 months ago or more.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was a long time.
Notice, though, that, you know, Shannon Sharp brought it up last week on NFL Today. He said, you know, and he directly addressed Coach Belichick. I don't know if you saw this or even heard about it. He directly addressed Coach Belichick in the pregame. And he said, you know, if you, Coach Belichick, can pull this off with Matt Cassel at your quarterback, I'll forget all about Spygate. I'll forget all about Spygate. Nobody brought anything up. But he was showing that he has a personal agenda.
I guess he had some memory loss this week then.
I suppose. Yeah. Well, he actually was also one of the ones that picked the Jets last week.
No surprise. I think almost everybody did.
Yeah. Well, I think the Sharp brothers, just for some reason or another, have a bug up their rear end. And that includes Sterling on NFL Network. They have a bug up their rear end about the Patriots. A lot of guys do.
Well, I think a lot of people do for the team that is the dominant team of the decade. This is clearly the dominant team of this decade.
Could be.
You know, they've won 3 Super Bowls. They went 16-0 last year in the regular season. They were in the AFC Championship game 2 years ago. This is the team.
The king is dead. Long live the king, right?
They
want to chop the one down and bring another one in.
Look, the Cowboys have a worldwide fan base.
Sure they do.
But they certainly have their share of haters around the league.
Oh, absolutely.
Still, even when they were bad, people loved to see the Cowboys lose.
Yep.
Even when they were bad.
But the Cowboys were never that bad for that long.
They weren't that bad for that long, but even when they were in those few times, people still loved to hate them because they remember the good times. It's the same thing with the Patriots now. The Patriots have achieved that level of success that people will hate them no matter what they do.
Right. All right, let's bring in NFL research coordinator from ESPN, our good friend Russell Baxter, into the Patriots playbook. Russell, how are you today?
I'm good. How are we doing?
Great. Say hello to Eric Scalavino from PFW.
Russ,
hello,
how you doing?
Eric Scalavino from PFW. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm terrific.
We were just getting...
How's Hub Arkish these days?
What's that?
How's Hub Arkish?
Hub Arkish?
Hub Arkish.
Are you Pro Football Weekly at
PFW?
Patriots Football Weekly. Oh, now come on.
Now.
20 years of PFW meant Pro Football Weekly.
Yes, I understand. I understand completely.
You know? I know that well because they used to be the competition when I was at CPFN.
CPFN.
So I figured that one out.
College and Pro Football News Weekly.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, there you go. See, now you know what that one is. See, I'm only ever associated with things with 4 letters.
Gotcha.
You know, no NBC, no CBS. It's ESPN.
Okay. Gotcha.
So no PFW,
only
no
4-letter words
no.
for you? Is that what I'm hearing? This is a family show, Russell.
I'm a 4-letter guy.
4-letter guy.
I didn't say 4-letter words. 4-letter network.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we were actually getting into the story that Commissioner Goodell sent out that memo to teams around the league today concerning the fine that Albert Mack will be serving or paying for his hit on Matt Ryan last week, and wondering why maybe it took a week after, you know, Bernard Pollard did to Tom Brady for this to get around the league. I wondered if you had any thoughts or if any of the guys that you work with have any thoughts about that today.
No, we haven't convened yet to, you know, talk about the latest news and so on. I would imagine, you know, and I, from what I understand with the Albert Mack, this is what, his second offense?
Is it his second offense?
Yeah, I think the, what is a repeat violation for him.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess that's why.
Maybe that would certainly answer a lot then.
And then he was, what, suspended for 1 game, I believe, correct?
Suspended for a game and fined $5,000.
Right. Well, that's a good way to start your week. But I think that's probably why it more came to light. You know, as you well know, a lot of times when things in a league happen, suspensions and so on, we never hear about the first and second offense.
Mm-hmm.
We always just hear about the suspension. Mm-hmm. So then we have to put two and two together and realize that, well, this person must have done something wrong 1 or 2 times for it to get to this stage, and I would imagine that'll be, you know, what the speculation is. I think most of the, as you know, most of the attention this week off the field slash on the field has probably gone to Ed Hockley in the Chargers Broncos game.
Yeah, right.
Which has been, you know, now I guess what Ed Hockley is getting hate mail, hate email. You know,
I feel badly for him.
You got to give fans credit.
I wouldn't even waste
41 cents on sending somebody a letter anyway.
No, but I feel badly for Ed because he's been such a superlative referee
for
a number of years, and it just shows you we're all human. We all make mistakes here.
Well, no, that's not true. I went back and I checked, and I got a list of all the guys who emailed Ed Hockley, did a little research, because you know I tend to do numbers.
Yes, you do.
And not one of those people ever made a mistake in their lives.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll explain it. Okay, well, then they're justified then, right?
There you go. See, I understand. See, I understand that mentality. I mean, come on. Give me a break.
And, you know, the thing, Hockley went up to the coach afterwards and said, hey, look, I'm sorry. My bad. I messed up. And, you know, at least he had the gumption to do that. I don't think a lot of people would have done that.
No.
I think they would have, internally, they might have said, oh, boy.
That showed
I really
me a lot,
screwed
though,
that
when
up.
He did that.
But they would have kept it to themselves.
Yeah, absolutely showed me a lot.
I'll go out on a limb. We all work with people who wouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right.
You're probably working with somebody right now who wouldn't have done that.
Probably.
Two-gender.
So, don't look behind you, John. So.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surrounded by them.
You need them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Two-gender.
it's so true, but it's so true. It happens. He owned up to it. It was an honest mistake. Did it affect the game? Absolutely, because the Chargers get the ball back. I totally understand that, but it's you know, why we have these. That's why it's played by human being. A human being threw the ball. A human being makes the call.
On the other side of it, North Turner's reaction kind of
understandable.
Heat of the moment kind of thing.
Sure, absolutely, of course.
Do you think he regrets now having gone so overboard in his criticism?
I don't know if he regrets it. I think those were his honest emotions at the time, Eric. You know, it's just like, well, if he regrets it, I'm sure Ed regrets making the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's the same thing.
Balances out.
You know, what happens and stuff. And Norv now has to get ready for the New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He can let that thing, what happened last week, cloud his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or he can be ill-prepared and wind up being 0-3.
Yeah.
Now, we know last year, 0-2 won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We also know that 0-3, only five times in the history of this league, the team rebounded from 0-3 and worse and even made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So,
history.
Yeah. That's 88 years of history. So
I think it works in their favor that they're playing the Jets this week.
Well,
yes,
to get that win.
Hurts, yes, yeah. Absolutely. It sucks to be the Jets this week. I agree with you on that one. Absolutely.
And they're at home.
Wasn't exactly cherry pie being the Jets last week.
No, that's true. It wasn't. Speaking of that, I mean, what were your overall impressions of how Matt Cassel handled himself and how the team handled the performance in the week AB after Brady?
Well, I know this sounds hard to believe, it's that you can actually win a football game with, you know, without the quarterback throwing for 400 yards. In fact, you usually win more games when your quarterback doesn't throw for 400 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you guys remember the Patriots when Brady first took over. In fact, think of the irony of this. The first game Tom Brady started was a Week 3 game versus
the
Colts.
Yep.
At home. They won 44-13.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How many touchdown passes did Tom throw in that game?
I think he threw one.
I think
he threw none.
Zero?
Yeah, I think Ty Law was the big night game that day.
Okay.
Yeah, there were a couple of defensive scores, some running.
What were the, you know, pre 50 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, Tom Brady, how did the Patriots play football? John, you and I have talked about this many times. The thing I admire about the Patriots is made 4 Super Bowl appearances and a different style of offense every time they've gotten there. They have always learned. The thing that makes them so dangerous is they know all the ways to win the games. Okay, when they won a Super Bowl in 2001, they faced the Raiders, they faced the Steelers, and they faced the Rams in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Their offense scored 3 touchdowns in those 3 playoff games. Their offensive unit.
Right.
Their defense and special team scored 3 touchdowns. And they won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to play football. They know how to win. And by the way, until you can start anointing teams to be the favorite in the AFC East, be it New York Jets or the Buffalo Bills, not the Miami Dolphins right now, you know, they're in a very rebuilding mode and so on. You got to learn how to beat a team in your own building, which New York Jets announced dropped 8 straight at home to the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the most fundamental thing about this National Football League is controlling your division first. And there's a reason that the Patriots, including playoffs, have beaten the Jets 11 out of 12 times. There's a reason they've beaten the Bills 9 times in a row. Is they concentrate on the things they have to do, get into the playoffs, and then off they go.
Yeah, start with the easiest road, win your division.
That's what you got to start with. Start knocking off the king before you can become the king.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody got a lesson in the resiliency of the dominant teams that you guys were alluding. I was listening, raising your listening ship there. The dominant team
all helps
in this league this decade.
Yep, right. Interesting. We've had more injuries to deal with this week in terms of news and things that are going on. I mean, obviously, Bob Sanders is going to miss up to 6 weeks with an injury this week.
I find that interesting, too, that it's his prognosis for return just happens to fall on week 9.
Oh, about the time that they meet New England,
when
right?
New England comes back to town.
Right. We also saw, another quarterback move being made was Tavares Jackson is being told now he's going to sit for Minnesota, and Gus Frerotte apparently is going to get the reins for the rest of the year.
I don't see that happening, by the way.
I'm not sure it does either, but at the same time, Russell, I guess the overall point here is that I sense that some teams, not everyone, but a few teams, after just 2 weeks, are starting to press or at least point to looking at the panic button.
I'll pose the question to both of you. How do you go from I have confidence in the young man to the other guy's the starter for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I don't get that one either. That's pretty good. Just tells me that
it's a panic move.
It's absolutely a panic move. Absolutely.
That's what not Gus Frerotte is going to start this week.
See what happens.
Quantum
right.
leap.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I don't understand. And I think there is a little sense of panic there. I don't think there's any question about it.
And it's a panic move and or it's a move by a coach who's just not that good.
And
who doesn't really make good decisions.
Well, I think still, I understand the fact that this is a league that anything can happen. But you got to let those things happen. And I think we were so quick because of the last few years. Everybody's trying to pick that Cinderella. Everybody's trying to pick that dark horse team. And I was amazed to find out after all the moves they made in the offseason that the Minnesota Vikings went from an 8-8 football team to suddenly being one of the top two teams in the NFC. Again, you got to crawl before you can walk. You got to learn to win before you win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Vikings
I couldn't understand why everybody – and again – when it happens, it happens. Right. New Orleans Saints went from 3-13 to a game within the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Right.
We didn't see that coming. But we didn't see that coming because it was unexpected. Suddenly, this team is like, well, there's no Brett Favre in the NFC North. Okay, mm-hmm. They're the best team. They just gave up a slew of draft picks and a lot of money to get Jared Allen. He's the missing piece.
Yeah.
We got Adrian Peterson. We got a great,
there's a chic pick every year.
The team was more flawed than that. And I'm not saying they can't rebound from being 0-2. There's no, of course they can. The Giants proved that last year. Mm-hmm. But, play from behind. Don't, who wants to be the favorite anymore? Who wants to be the favorite? Go out and take care of your business. Mm-hmm. And before, we anoint so fast now, this and that and so on. I believe it has a peripheral effect on the kids, and I say kids, who play these games now, both college and professional sports. I think that's why the underdog thrives now, because the pressure is so overwhelming from the fans, from the media, and so on. In some ways, and disagree with me if you will, the art of winning, in some instances, the fun has been taken out of it. Because when you win now and you're supposed to win, it's a relief. It doesn't necessarily have that joy associated with it sometimes.
It's a business transaction.
Yeah, that's exactly. All right. They're supposed to win. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
What are you going to do next year?
I think you find that a lot of coaches in the league would agree with you that particular assessment.
No, I think our
own coach down the hallway here would have to go along those lines. Mm-hmm. It just sucks all the fun out of winning.
The power of the New England Patriots and the Indianapolis Colts and, to a degree, Seattle, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Green Bay.
They come back year after year in the playoffs.
All to be admired.
Because they know how to do it. Right.
And they do it every year.
And they manage
to come back every year.
In the face of adversity, they manage to do it.
Regardless of circumstances. I mean, think about what we're getting ready to see for at least the next 4 to 6 weeks. the offensive and defensive players of the year are out of the league.
Yeah, Bob Sanders gone, Brady out for the year.
That's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. That's a tough thing to have to deal with.
We posed the question on NFL, Sunday NFL Countdown, shameless but good plug.
Absolutely.
Last week.
Plug away.
Who could least afford week one? And our, you know, analysts speculated on different teams. Mm-hmm. My answer was the National Football League.
Which
could
makes
least afford a week where we lose Tom Brady and Sean Merriman.
Mm-hmm.
And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because that's not good for the game when that many people go down.
Which is why we opened up the whole discussion here earlier, Russell, about you know, why did it take another week of a questionable hit and one in the head as well as compared to one in the legs for the commissioner to issue a memo to the other teams around the league saying, fellas, you got to watch yourselves. You know, why did it take so long? And why are they giving helmet-to-helmet contact more consideration than hits below the legs, below the knees?
Oh, no, it's almost like, you know, we, John, you and I have talked about on the show before, you know, I call the NFL a two-gap league, read and react. It's like somebody said something, somebody made a big deal about something, and all of a sudden gets a little more pub. But I get the feeling because, you know, did anybody know that Albert Mack had been accused of this before? No, we find out about it afterwards and so on. So now did Bernie Pollard have a history of doing this? Obviously not.
No,
and
well,
we
don't know. Do we know?
No.
No, we don't. That's the answer. We don't know.
You know what? That's probably the better answer. That's right. Maybe we don't know. Maybe he's gotten, you know, a slap on the wrist or a letter or a memo, and maybe he got an email from Ed Hockley, for all I know.
You know? I have no idea. I don't have the slightest idea.
He seemed genuinely apologetic all throughout the post-game interviews.
I don't think there's any question. You know, it's funny, Bernie Pollard, if you remember when he came in the league a couple years ago, and, you know, great, he's a really outstanding special teams player. Really outstanding. Great on coverage, knack for blocking kicks and stuff like that. He's one of those guys who goes full board all the time. And, you know, when I saw him slide into Tom's knee the way he did, it reminded me of watching him on special teams trying to block a kick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just the way he plays. I mean, obviously no malice intended, and obviously he felt bad afterwards. So I guess I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Obviously,
to get Albert Mack the benefit of the doubt only because we know that he's been warned before.
Well,
so.
I give him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't mean to hurt Brady, certainly. I give him the benefit of the doubt on that. What I'm just questioning, and we talked about it earlier in the show, was how did the league not take any steps to address this? They're taking a step to address Matt Ryan getting hit in the head. And
right.
Matt Ryan is playing this Sunday, oh, by the way. And we didn't hear anything from the league last week about Tom Brady, who's, oh, by the way, out for the year.
Right.
I just I don't see why they did one for one and not for the other, especially when the other is your MVP.
And if you want to take it a step further, I know you guys have much discussed what's the difference with Vince Wilfork.
Yeah,
exactly.
With the times that he's been flagged or fined or both for some of his hits as well last year and so on. So there's a little lack of consistency and so on. I mean, I very much like the debates of a player being reprimanded and not necessarily a coach being reprimanded. So I think we're still kind of sorting. That's why I kind of use the term read and react. It's like if something makes a stink, nobody seemed to make a big stink out of Bernie Pollard's hit per se. Now, you know, I'm not trying to write it off.
Mm-hmm.
I think the discussion afterwards was based on malice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This again, I think this was only brought up. I don't think anybody knows who Albert Mack is until this happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
True.
So all of a sudden it's a big discussion, but you know, sometimes when these things like this start to get wings, then all of a sudden we start delving a little deeper and deeper and deeper. And all of a sudden the antenna's up and you know, the periscope is up, and all of a sudden we'll be watching everything a lot more closely.
But here's
like last week we had the Ed Hockley situation. Yeah. The NFL's response, now we're going to look at this at the meetings.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you are a player and you intentionally grab a face mask of another player, a flag goes down, you get 15 yards, right?
Correct.
If you're
it doesn't even matter now. You grab a face mask intentionally or unintentionally.
That was going to be the analogy I draw. If you mistakenly grab a face mask and in the process of trying to make a tackle,
right,
a flag goes down, you get 15 yards.
Right.
Intent is not an issue
Right.
The fact that you have to consistently call face masks is the issue.
Right.
So my point is, whether or not Bernard Pollard or Vince Wilfork meant to go after J.P. Losman or Tom Brady's legs, there should be a consistency in the reaction to the play.
I totally agree. And just I agree with your point, but I'll also point out, Liz, how long did it take them to get to that stage of the face mask penalty?
Yeah, you're right. It took a while.
How long did it take
to
take the speculation out of it?
Yep. Yeah, because they had intentional or not 5 yards versus 15.
We're not going
right.
to debate whether it's 5 or 15.
Right.
We're now going to say either take your hands off the face mask or you're
right.
going to get a 15-yard.
Yeah, good point.
And it only took them now, I'm trying to remember the first year face masks were in the league, and when they started penalizing. I think in the 50s and 60s, I think it was a separate sport to grab a guy by the face mask and fling him around.
Yeah.
And they played football a little differently in the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah.
But, you know, as of recently, you know, it's running into the punter. You know, they finally changed that. You know, you get enough of a stink with some of these things, and all of a sudden they go back and look at it and tweak and retweak. I mean, we're always tweaking this game. We're always tweaking this game. You guys know that as well as anyone. And in the offseason, we're going to be tweaking some more. It only took 2 weeks to get two new tweakable offenses.
That's true.
Oh, God.
It's been an active start to this season, hasn't it?
Absolutely. You're very right, Russell. It is a read and react league.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we call it, the NFL 2 gap.
Yep. All right, let's start off at the very least here, try to hit on a couple of games for this week. And I wanted to start with your game, the Monday night game, simply because we kind of talked a little bit about the Jets and San Diego, and now San Diego has had its own injury problems, and the Jets are kind of walking into, well, they don't really maybe know what they're walking into in light of what happened with the Ed Hockley situation last week. I know that San Diego right now is about a 5.5-point favorite at home. Is there any doubt, though, that San Diego doesn't get their first win of the season?
Well, I will say this, John and Eric. If San Diego, you know, be it Merriman played the first week and didn't play the second week, if the San Diego Chargers don't find their defense, they're going to make the Jets' offense look pretty good. Okay, let's keep something in mind here. They let the Carolina Panthers come down the field in the final 2.5 minutes and beat them at home. Last week, they made a play, you know, forget it. But Brandon Marshall caught 18 passes last week against them. So we haven't seen the Chargers defense that kind of caught fire in the playoffs in the second half of the year last year. Mm-hmm. You know, and anytime you start to play defense like that, where you're giving up, they have allowed a team to come down the field. And again, it's hard to kind of put a concrete number on it because we know deep down that they made a stop. They made a play, even though it was actually Jay Cutler who dropped the ball. No one forced him to drop the ball and so on. But, it, you know, still, Jay Cutler threw the ball all over them. Jake DeLone was able to drive down the field on them. I'm a little concerned with San Diego's defense more than anything else. And it's not necessarily just been that they've given up a lot of passing yards. You know, teams are been able to move the ball ground on them as well. So, listen, LT's got a little bit of a toe issue. Antonio Gates, a little toe issue. Phillip Rivers is playing terrific. There's no question about that. So I don't know if I'm necessarily going to chalk this one up because here's what I'll say. It's 20-14 San Diego, and there's 5 minutes left, and the Jets have the ball. Does the element of doubt start to creep into the San Diego Chargers' mind?
Sure. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably does. I think it probably does.
That's what we've seen so far. We've seen teams been able to come down the field. And let's throw out the fact that San Diego, I mean that Denver scored at the end of the game. Denver still came down the field on them. And San Diego was way down and managed to take the lead in that game. They certainly have playmakers on their offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rivers we talked about, Darren Sproles was tremendous last week, both on offense and special teams. So they certainly – listen, San Diego's been a very talented team the last few years. For one reason or another, they've either missed the playoffs, been an early out, or you know things just went wrong at the end. They didn't have many healthy bodies last year in the playoffs, although they would have got Chet when they had it in Indianapolis and then did their best but couldn't beat the New England Patriots.
Right.
But something always seems to be wrong here, and they've gotten off to a very sluggish start. And if they don't start winning soon, and again, it's very early in the season, and Denver continues to play the way they're playing because Jay Cutler looks tremendous. They could dig themselves in a hole and it won't matter how they play the rest of the season. They'll be climbing uphill all year.
Let's move also within the division to Oakland at Buffalo, and only because certainly for a couple of reasons. Number one, Oakland got their first win, maybe somewhat surprisingly, but they did get one last week over Kansas City. And while Buffalo seems to be the sort of the chic pick right now, especially out of the AFC East, let me ask you from this perspective: what about Buffalo, Russell, gives you reason to think that they could be in this for the long haul?
Because just like Carolina did in the draft, Buffalo did it a year earlier via free agency for the most part. They fortified themselves on the offensive and defensive lines. And trench-wise, their Bills offensive line played very well last year. They've got a hard-charging, hard-running back, physical back in Marshawn Lynch. They seem like they have some young stability. He's going to make his mistakes, Trent Edwards. You know, they went out and got the kid from Indiana, Hardy, the wide receiver. Gives them a little more size down near the goal line. They just are a better football team where it counts most, and that's in the holes. And I don't think you could say that in recent years about the Bills. They've had some good players, and Eric Moulds and Lee Evans, and I'm going back a ways, because remember the Bills have not been in the playoffs since the Music City Miracle. That was their last playoff appearance.
Right.
They have not been in the playoffs this decade. But going out and getting the guys they have on the offensive and defensive lines, you know, sprinkle in some solid skill people, and that's how you win football games. You still win it with blocking and tackling, playing good defense. That's why teams like Indy and New England and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh all stay consistent. They stay stable up front. And when they're not stable up front, and I'm sure we're going to talk about Indy and Jacksonville in a little while,
mm-hmm.
No matter who your skill people are, it's not going to matter, because if you can't block for them or protect them, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
That you are. I Vic Carucci, who you know obviously very well.
Yes, I know Vic.
And,
yeah,
and he's a good friend of the program here, and very well respected individual throughout the league for what he does. And he told me yesterday, Russell, that he thinks Buffalo's for real, and he still has some doubts in the Patriots just because of the overall impression that I guess that everybody is left with the Patriots being quarterback-less from Tom Brady's perspective. And I said, doesn't that mean then that you're sort of denigrating the rest of the team? And I said, in the same regard, where Buffalo's concerned, when has Buffalo done it to where you've given them this much confidence? The fact is that he has Buffalo very, very highly ranked. I said, how can we make this judgment after 2 weeks?
Right. And, I've never been one of those people. So I'm going to paraphrase. If I'm saying the wrong thing, tell me. Buffalo is better because New England is not as good.
You know what? That's probably as good a reason as you could give.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
In other words, the Buffalo Bills are a better football team because New England lost its quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guessing.
Makes sense to me.
I'm guessing that has got to be the underlying reason behind the way people thinking the way they are. I mean, what other reason is there for the Patriots being ranked lowly in all these, stinking power ranking polls and the Bills ranked that highly? What other reason is there?
Well, here's what I'll say, and we'll stick with fact here. I believe the teams play each other the first time in Week 10.
Yes.
And then in the season finale.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. The Buffalo Bills last year gave up 94 points in two games against New England Patriots.
That's right.
The Buffalo Bills have lost 9 games in a row
yes.
to the New England Patriots.
Right.
Okay.
So are we figuring that maybe have just got to even out somehow?
Buffalo is better because Tom Brady is not around.
But are they that much better?
No, I don't agree with either.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Show me.
And that was the whole point. He said that
exactly.
The Bills had showed him through 2 weeks, and the Patriots had not. 2 weeks? That's not a sampling.
It's a vacation.
Yeah, it's a vacation.
2 weeks is a vacation.
Tell me, after 6 weeks, all right, I'm beginning to believe you.
But my point also is this: is another team isn't good just because a competitive team lost a player.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
It's like I've heard this on our network.
Yeah, that's the overriding perception on the Patriots. The Patriots
right.
are worse
I've heard
because
this
of
on
one
our
player.
Network and I've heard other people say it.
Yeah,
they've got a really good shot. They're going to have a really good year because their schedule is weak.
That's
so
true.
In other words, are they really a good football team, or you tell me they're going to have a good record.
There's a difference. All things are relative. That's true. All things are relative. There's a difference.
In other words, they're good. So when they get to the playoffs and have to play a really good football team, and they haven't played a really good football team all year, as soon as they lose, you're going to say, well, they're a product of their schedule.
Of course.
The two things never make any sense.
No.
In a league of parity, what difference does your schedule make?
None. It's not supposed to, but undoubtedly, when the Patriots do lose, or for whatever reason, or when they get to the playoffs, and people say, "Well, who do they play in the regular season? They're not going to be ready to play in the playoffs." You know that argument is coming.
It's coming. Listen, we fashion arguments. We all make poor courtroom lawyers. Okay, you fashion your arguments around the shortcomings of others. It just doesn't make any sense. A team is good because another team lost somebody. Okay.
Well, Yeah.
My car is faster because your car has a flat tire.
That's true.
No, my car didn't get any faster, but I probably have a better shot at winning because you got a jack and you're
right, and you're busy trying to repair your tire. That's right.
But that didn't make my car faster. That just gave me a better shot because you're crippled.
That's correct.
That's the argument I have about the schedule. This is a really good, but not that good. What you're saying is, listen, they're really not that good, but they'll win a lot of games.
Yeah,
because of their schedule.
Right. Exactly.
I'll give you a simple Van Doyne, and it pans out all the time.
I personally,
if you're playing well, you'll beat anybody. If you're playing lousy, you'll lose to anybody.
I personally expect you, by the way, to castigate each member of on your set when they use that argument. Okay. Make sure you scream in their ear. Don't be an idiot.
I have a never mind. Go ahead and make me say something I'm not supposed to.
No, I won't. I wouldn't do that, Russell. I'm sorry. I'll let you end it right there because I'm not going to put you on the spot.
No, all that stuff will come in the book.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah, there you go. I can't wait to read it, by the way.
Yeah.
All right, let's
I'll come in the book, and I'll be sending it from Siberia.
Yeah, you're darn right you will be. Let's go to that Jacksonville-Indianapolis matchup because you got to, obviously, here's a team that was very lucky to win last week. I mean, Peyton really took the team on his shoulders. I think most people feel like he did last week to win a game they had no business winning. And maybe Minnesota even lost that game more than Indianapolis won it. But they're going up against a team in Jacksonville who has been one of the great disappointments overall. I would think at least through 2 weeks if you're going to use a 2-week snapshot of the league. So, and Jacksonville's got to do this on the road. So how much pressure is really on the Jaguars here?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure. But you know what? Funny enough, these are like mirror image teams this year. And I know one's 0-2 and I know 1-1. But here's something they do have in common. Can anybody name the guard and the two centers for either one of these teams?
No.
Because that's just where they've gotten really, really hurt. Both these teams.
Saturday.
I mean, the Indianapolis Colts are starting a rookie center,
yep,
a rookie guard, and another guard I don't think who played last year. Jacksonville has two of their guards on IR,
right?
Manuel and Maurice Williams, and Brad Meester isn't ready to come back at center.
Mm-hmm.
Indianapolis might get Jeff Saturday back this week. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. He had been practicing and so on. And both these teams have really taken a sting. Now, I'll tell you the difference, though, is the great thing about Peyton Manning is for many years he, as best he could make up for the loss of their defense. Last week he really made up for the loss of his offensive linemen up front. When it was all said and done, he still managed to throw for 300 yards last week because he needed to. And the thing that's interesting is David Garrard, who's already thrown 3 interceptions in 2 games, which is as many as he threw in his 12 starts last year,
mm-hmm,
been sacked 9 times in 2 games. He's thrown the ball about 40 fewer times than Peyton Manning has, and Peyton Manning's only been sacked 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
So Peyton knows so much about how to play this game. He finds other ways to offset the fact that he doesn't have his main guys in front of him. And it was all said and done, whether you called Minnesota losing it or not, the Indianapolis Colts got outplayed for about 2.5 quarters and somehow managed to squeak out a win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know what? That's what a champion does. That's what a team that has won the division 5 years in a row has done. And here we go again. Jacksonville, who have been the bullies, or the up-and-coming bullies, they have not consistently been able – well, I should say this, not been consistently able to beat the Colts. They've also struggled with the Titans and the Texans in their division. They have not done a great job beating the teams they need to be in order to win that AFC South. You know, since the AFC South came about, they have, you know, they made the playoffs a few times, but it's either been Tennessee 1 year and the Colts the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You got to learn how to beat the teams within your division. And as banged up as Indy is, in some ways Jacksonville might be more banged up. When you have a power running game with two backs like Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew, I mean, think about this. The Jacksonville Jaguars averaged almost 150 yards a game rushing last year. They have 131 yards rushing in two games.
Right.
The Indianapolis Colts have run for 78 yards in two games.
Wow, I don't think I really realized
78
that.
78 yards.
Yeah.
If I run over to the calf, well, I probably lose my breath. But that's probably, you know, that's close. But my point is Peyton Manning offsets what they don't have right now. I don't think David Garrard's in a position to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the two contenders. I know Tennessee's sitting there at 2-0, have some of their own problems to worry about. You know, great defense, but you know, I think we have question marks about their offense. This could be one of those divisions where it's, you know, 10-6 down that the Colts don't run away with it until the Colts get healthier. And now we're talking about Bob Sanders being out. So
that's
the walking wound. I think both teams might combine to have 44 guys on the field, period.
Wow.
Between Jacksonville and Indy. I mean, there's really a lot of walking wounded going on.
Looking like
here.
It's going that way. Let me also get to a couple of other games before we touch on the Patriots briefly. One of them is the Sunday night game. Dallas at Green Bay, I think, certainly has every reason to be maybe one of the best games, if not the best game of the week, stylistically speaking, because the way that Aaron Rodgers has played thus far for Green Bay, you'd have to admit that, at least at this stage of the game, Green Bay's move to go ahead and putting him in there and giving him on the charge of the offense has been a pretty good move. And Dallas, I think, is playing as well, if not better than just about anybody else in the league through this early stage of the game.
Yeah, and listen, last year, you know, it's interesting. Remember, these teams played last year on a Thursday,
mm-hmm.
Thursday night. And, you know, two things really came out if you think about it, John. Once Dallas won that game, they were anointed, in for most part, the team to beat in the NFC. Would you not agree?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Sure.
And they never recovered from it.
They never did. That's
okay.
True.
They were down the stretch. They almost lost to Detroit. They lost at home to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Lackluster against Carolina. Didn't really play their guys against Washington. And then 2 weeks later, were a playoff team and out. Last year in that game, no, Brett Favre got hurt, and came Aaron Rodgers. And after a couple of years where we weren't sure we had with Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he got on the field against the Patriots a couple of years ago, got hurt immediately. I think there were glimpses of Aaron Rodgers that made the Packer brass, not say, well, I'm ready to get rid of Brett Favre, but we're feeling a lot better about this kid than we were the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this turned out to be a pivotal game in a lot of ways. I mean, these are the teams that had the two best records in the conference last year in the NFC.
Yes, they did.
And now we have two quarterbacks coming in here playing, you know, lights-out football, and two defenses that I think we thought would be better in the early going, but teams have showed the ability to move the football against them. So we can only hope that we get 41-37.
That'd be great,
like
by
we
the
did
way.
Monday night.
Yeah.
And maybe we can get 51-47. But I think you're going to see some points on the part of both teams. And you know, you got two young, exciting quarterbacks who both, you know, ironically both waited their turn for different reasons. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers was a first round pick, and Tony Romo was never drafted. But they sat and they waited their turn. And now they're the future of these franchises. And it should be a very entertaining game up in Lambeau Field.
By the way, just as an aside here, were you surprised that the game last Monday night got the ratings that it did? Pleasantly so, I'm sure.
Well,
but
no, because
and by the way, congratulations for that. But I did.
Thank you very much. But I think since most people in the country know I work on the broadcast, I think that's what that's probably what the appeal was. They're hoping I was going to show. No, that's
the one and only Russell S. Baxter was working on that broadcast, right?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, was I surprised that it turned out to be the highest rated in cable history? Probably a little. I know there was a lot of excitement going into the game because of the way Philadelphia and Dallas both really, you know, beat up on the Rams and the Browns. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that Donovan McNabb was coming off 360, regardless of who they were playing. Okay, the Eagles were coming off scoring a lot of points, and the Cowboys are always the Cowboys, and so on. And listen, I mean, before you knew it, it was 20-14 Philadelphia. That game had everything. I mean,
sure did.
It had the big plays, it had the goofball plays, it had defensive scores, special team scores. It was the whole gamut. You know, if you weren't, you didn't necessarily turn it on at the very beginning. It wasn't long before you had that game on, and it came down to the very end. Mm-hmm. And you know, it'll be fun when those two teams play each other again.
Very true. All right, the other game I wanted to touch on briefly is the battle for Pennsylvania bragging rights, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Pittsburgh obviously is 2-0, and a lot of people seem to think at this stage now that, Pittsburgh may be the team to beat in the AFC. Well, Philadelphia showed that, you know, if they're not as good as Dallas, they're not far behind too many teams as well, and that overall they may very well be better than some people gave them credit for before the season started. I think that Pittsburgh-Philadelphia has a chance to be as good as any game this week.
Yeah, I think it could be a lot of fun. You know, you have the Steelers who have really kind of the first 2 weeks look like style-wise. This is strictly style-wise. They look more like a team from the team 3 years ago mm-hmm. in 2004, 2005, where only by choice now really have decided to put the onus back on the running game and play defense and get the passing from Ben Roethlisberger when needed. And Ben makes so many big plays when you don't think he's going to make them. Mm-hmm. And their offensive line, I think, has played better than people figured they would. And, of course, they lost Alan Faneca, and last year they had a lot of problems protecting Ben Roethlisberger and so on. But I think the fact that they're taking less chances, they are now running to set up the pass. These last few years they were doing it the other way around, and eventually that always get you in trouble. Philadelphia, listen, they've added the playmaker in DeSean Jackson. Once he realizes that the football field is 100 yards.
Yeah, really? I mean, come on. Can't somebody talk to that kid? This is not the first time it's happened to him.
I thought maybe he was lateraling to Leon Lett or something on that play. But, I mean, you know.
Oh, my God.
Pet peeve. I'll throw it out now.
Yeah.
It's the same thing I can't understand anybody, I don't care who it is, diving into the end zone from
mm-hmm,
the one.
Mm-hmm.
Just get in the end zone. I don't care. Do anything you want and then get fined.
Yeah.
I at least give Chad Johnson credit. I mean, he's a piece of work. But at least he begins his whole antics at least after he gets in there.
Right.
Okay, the kids who die from the two and the one, what happens if you drop that ball? You'll be on Dick Clark's show for the rest of your life.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, but, I mean, what are you doing? Fortunately.
That was, yeah.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah, it didn't burn him.
He has an escalator bonus in his contract for another touchdown. That'd be funny at the end of the year.
Oh, man.
You know, but in any case, this should be fun. I'm waiting for somebody to preview a Steelers-Eagles Super Bowl preview, even though we're in week three. I'm sure someone will drop that hint somewhere.
Somebody will.
I think I heard so many people who figured they were a little surprised that they probably saw more out of Philadelphia in a loss than they did necessarily when they won, when they beat the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
But they look like they have their confidence back. They made plays when they had to make plays. Now, defensively, they seem like they had some holes. I'll tell you what I'm going to be looking at in this game, because look at the tight ends in this game. Keep an eye on L.J. Smith and keep an eye on Heath Miller. Jason Witten had a big game against the Eagles the other night. You know, Brian Dawkins had a little trouble covering him. The Steelers played at 3-4, and a lot of times very vulnerable to the tight end in that style of defense. Watch McNabb and Roethlisberger, and maybe not the receivers, the wideouts, but maybe it'll be the tight ends who control the middle of the field. Just throwing it out there.
Good. No, I think that's a good thing to look for. That brings us, obviously, to Miami at New England, 1 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday. I would ask you point blank, is there any way, at least in your estimation, that Miami wins this football game? What does New England have to do to lose it?
Forfeit?
Oh, that bad, huh?
No. Well, listen, let's call it as what it is. The Patriots have won 21 straight regular season games.
The last team to beat them was Miami in
06. Yes, right. Yes. But since then, since they beat them, the Dolphins are 1-20.
Correct.
Okay? They're 1-20.
Mm-hmm.
So they're obviously in a rebuilding mode. Okay?
Yeah.
The Dolphins, I think the thing to keep an eye on is, you know, I heard a lot of talk last week that Matt Castle didn't necessarily try the deep ball, which, I mean, sure, that's what you're supposed to do. Make your first NFL start and start throwing it 70 yards.
Well, yeah, the deep ball was taken away. I mean, Coach Belichick even explained here on Monday, he said that, the Jets were rolling the safety over, in effect doubling down on Moss. That left everything open underneath.
Absolutely.
And that happened at least a half a dozen times or more last year for Tom Brady.
Right. Well, my point is, John, that Matt Castle's making his first start, okay? Is he supposed to go in there and throw for 400 yards and throw the ball? No, you play to your strengths. But my other point is Miami's vulnerability with their DBs, which they seem very unsettled at that position.
Yes, they do.
And you have seen big play from Brett Favre in the first game. Mm-hmm. You saw a lot of big plays from the Arizona Cardinals last week. I think Matt Castle will take three or four shots downfield, and
yes,
I think one or two of them will pay off.
I agree.
Because of the opponent they're playing.
Yes.
And take advantage of that. And that's going to make it tough, because I think if Miami finds itself down 14 or down 17, either quickly or whatever, they're just not built yet to overcome that. So we shall see. But I think, the Dolphins will get better. You know, we know the regime there is very important. And we'll get it done. But Rome nor New England nor any great team was built in a day. It takes usually 3 or 4 days. So in any case, it's just not the Dolphins' time yet.
Right. But no more than that. 3 or 4 days is all we'll tolerate around here.
That's it. Exactly right. You cost you your job. You can coach.
That's right. So. Absolutely. Russell, great to talk with you again. Thank you very much for the extra time today. It's always appreciated. You know that.
My pleasure, and Eric as well. I don't know if he's still there, but
he actually went off upstairs to finish writing his stuff for this week's magazine. So.
Oh, okay, well, he never writes me anymore anyway. So.
That's exactly right.
All right, John, take care. We'll talk soon.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right, Russell S. Baxter, again, NFL research coordinator for ESPN and the family of networks, joining us here on a Thursday, as he always does, talking some football, taking a look at the key matchups around the NFL, and certainly looking at the Patriots matchup each and every week, every Thursday, right here inside the Patriots playbook. Let's pause here for a timeout, read a couple of emails, we'll look at a couple of the matchup scenarios for Sunday's game, and get you ready a little bit closer for football Sunday afternoon right here at Gillette Stadium. All coming up inside the playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information, and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
And we head out the home stretch for Patriots Playbook for today, for this Thursday, also for this week as well. And don't forget that coming up at the top of the hour in about 20 minutes, the Fantasy Lowdown with Brian Lowe. So if you have your fantasy questions for him and things about what you have for your team or teams coming up this week, he'll take those just after 4 o'clock Eastern time. In the meantime, if you have some thoughts on a score prediction for Sunday, obviously, everybody thinks that this is going to be overwhelmingly in favor of the Patriots, because I certainly haven't seen anything to the contrary. In fact, only a couple of scores have come in, so I'm glad that you're overconfident. What happens when you're overconfident? You get your butt handed to you, so be careful when you're overconfident. I was reading in the Palm Beach Post in particular, where they were talking a little about how Joey Porter, the Dolphins, is saying they're going to do everything but basically throw the kitchen sink and throw that in there too. Porter said how he asked how he would get ready to face Matt Castle for this week, and he said, treat him like you prepare for a backup. Throw the kitchen sink at him. We're going to come after the guy. It'll be good to go out there and get our first victory. That, of course, is what, you know, we've been talking about, and for some reason you missed Joey Porter saying that. That is, of course, what he said. Porter lines up on the outside, generally behind Vonnie Holiday on that side of the defense. He's going to be a busy man, I think, on Sunday. Going to be my guess that he's going to be a busy man. John writes this email, in fact, in light of it here. He says, I would like to personally thank Joey Porter for showing the world just how ignorant he really is. But are his comments really bulletin board material? No. Let's be real here. Last year when the big mouth for the Steelers guaranteed a win, it was during a time when the Steelers were a threat. That was motivating and got them fired up, even to the point where Brady got in his face after burning him on a bomb touchdown pass. But Porter, Miami? Come on. The only thing he has managed to do is bring a lack of respect to a team who hasn't played well lately, but has historically not talked smack about its opponents. I have nothing against a team like the Dolphins, except for Mercury the Mouth Morris. I can't imagine Parcells nor Pennington is very happy about this. You know, actually, John, that's a great point, because traditionally Miami isn't a team that does a lot of yapping. And then Porter comes over and does some yapping. But like I was mentioning with Eric Scalavino earlier, maybe he sort of feels like I've got to do something to inject some life into the situation that is 0-2 and fading fast.
That's a pretty good observation.
Although I would have to say that I don't think he's that smart to figure that out, at least initially. But it could be. You got to at least take it in consideration that he's just trying to inject some life and some energy, no matter how negative it might be perceived. He's trying to give his team a fighting chance, if you will, knowing that the Patriots are going to come out fighting. I've opened up my big mouth. You better be ready on Sunday.
No disrespect.
Yeah, well, of course not. You're never there to issue disrespect, even though it invariably happens. By the way, John says, Pats 27, Fish 3. This is the perfect game to start to give Matt Castle a bit more passing plays. Look for Matt to have a big day and for Randy to get his smile back. John, that's a good one. I'll give you my final score. I'm going to say 27 to 10. I'm going to say 27 to 10 largely because I think that, you know, the Patriots defense will probably bend and maybe, you know, break slightly on one drive, or field position game will be poor, and the Dolphins will manage to take advantage of it, because quite frankly, Chad Pennington has always played pretty well against the Patriots. I really don't see any reason for that to discontinue. Some guys just play teams certain ways for inexplicable reasons, and I think you realize that as well as anybody else. So I'm willing to think that Chad Pennington will probably come out and take it somewhat personally as well, especially with the talk in and around the South Florida media this week that Chad Henne, his rookie backup from Michigan, should actually be the quarterback in there, which is a sort of a story within the story from the Dolphins' perspective this week. Now, if the Patriots get up early and they get ready to, you know, pound on the Dolphins, don't be surprised to see Henne in the ballgame, especially if Pennington does not do well. That's an issue for them, obviously, to go through, and they're for their fans and their coaches and their ownership to deal with. But that would not surprise me in the least if the Patriots get up. I do think that what you'll see, and to me, there are two big matchups that you have to look at for Sunday. Number one is basically the Patriots receivers, in this particular instance, Randy Moss, against the corners for the Dolphins, which would include Andre Goodman in particular, I would think, and Will Allen. And in particular, where Moss is concerned, Moss has to be Randy Moss. He has to own the opposition secondary. Now, last week he had the one deep ball thrown to him in a sort of an audible, if you will, waving his hand. Castle admittedly underthrew the ball, but still, that's a ball that Randy Moss needs to catch. And I think if you saw the play, you would agree. And many of you who saw the play probably do agree. Yeah, Randy still should have made that catch, even though the defensive back, the ball hung up there a little bit, and the defensive back was able to make somewhat of a play on it. Should have caught the ball. We need to see Randy catch the ball. And when he does catch the ball, then whatever perceived frowns or, you know, malcontent he has on his mind, that will disappear. And I think you're right about that in that particular, John. Goodman has been a decent cover corner. Based on what I've seen and what I've read, he's been decent. But the problem is that he, along with everybody else, it seems like in the secondary of Miami, has really been banged up. There just aren't too many guys, I think, that you realize that can stick with Randy Moss. So what happens here? You know, the Dolphins have to choose their poison. And so if they decide to do, which is going to be my guess here, okay, guys, this is really my guess. And it's just an educated guess or a non-educated guess, depending on your perspective, I suppose. The guess here is that the Dolphins will do similarly like the Jets did. They're going to roll the safeties over. Crocker or Bell, whoever's playing on that side of the field, probably Crocker, I'm guessing. And then they're going to end up trying to double down on Moss, and they're going to ask Matt Castle and the Patriots' running game to beat them, like the Jets did last week. And they're going to try to put it in the strength of their defense and let Vonnie Holiday and Jason Ferguson and those guys up front, and then certainly Porter Channing Crowder and the linebackers try to fill in those gaps. And they're going to try to force the Patriots to play into their strengths, knowing that the secondary is a weakness. So I wouldn't at all be surprised if, you know, the Patriots don't. They may try to go to Moss, but if they end up throwing to him a couple of times and everybody says, well, what's wrong with Randy? How come you're not throwing to him? It's because, why? It's because Matt Castle can't throw to him? No. It's because they're doing what the defense is dictating them to do. You react in this instance and you take what's open. Now, if the Dolphins won't allow Wes Welker to, you know, slice him and dice him, fine. I'd really like to see the Patriots throw a little bit more often, get more involved with David Thomas. You know, in the absence of Benjamin Watson, you know, with him still being, you know, banged up, I'd like to see David Thomas get a couple more looks, you know, his direction, his way. I think you'll see a steady dose of Maroney slash Falk slash Morris slash Jordan. I do believe that you will see. And I'm sure when the opportunity presents itself, you'll see them go top. But that's the big matchup. And then, of course, on the other end, Miami's strength has to be Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown. I don't think there's any two ways about it. I mean, Ted Ginn, Greg Camarillo, are they gonna frighten you? Are they gonna concern you in terms of wide receivers? No. Anthony Fasano at tight end? No, not really. I think Miami, if they can establish the running game and get, you know, 4 and 5 yards of whack and alternate Williams and Brown at least effectively enough where they can hold on to the football, then I think you'll see them try to unleash, you know, again perhaps. But the Patriots, the big, you know, key here on the other side is really the Patriots front three defensively, guys like Richard Seymour against the offensive line for Miami and a rookie like Jake Long. I mean, I do think that you'd have to favor the Patriots in this particular instance as well. But you're going to want to watch those battles. I think those are the key battles that will ultimately determine or help determine the outcome of Sunday's game. Watch how the Patriots' defensive line can put pressure on Pennington and whether or not the Dolphins' offensive line can create enough running room for guys like Williams and Brown. They have to pound the ball. They have to hold on to the ball, and they have to pound it at people, and then they have to score big in the red zone. If they can, conceivably, the Dolphins can make this a game. If the Patriots turn the ball over, if they give it up the short end of the field, if they don't play field position well with, you know, the way Gostkowski did last week with the booming kicks, then the Dolphins can be in this game. But it's going to take a lot of ifs for the Dolphins to be in this game. And whether or not the Patriots receivers on the other side can exploit a Miami secondary that is banged up and inexperienced both. And that's usually a fairly lethal combination. All right, just my 2 cents worth in terms of the matchups for this week. That's kind of how I'm looking at things here. And I do kind of think that 27-10 in that vicinity will probably be, should be, how the game turns out, give or take a few points here and there. Can Miami win it? Well, sure, any team in the NFL can win on any given Sunday. We've seen that. But it all is predicated on what the Patriots do or don't do. I don't really think there's anything that Miami can do. All things being equal, Miami can't win this game. The Patriots can lose it. And that's a big difference. There's a big difference between the two. So that's what I think would end up happening here. I also, and we'll look ahead here just a bit, because we'll spend all of next week being the bye week, so to speak, for the team. We'll spend much of next week looking at other things and other stories around the league, and you know, and the Patriots will have a chance to sort of self-evaluate after 3 weeks. The bye week, I think, is going to come at a good time for this team. We did say at the beginning of the year, in light of the Tom Brady injury, that I think there were a lot of you who even expressed your feelings to this program and to PFW as well, that, you know, you wouldn't be totally unhappy with 2-1 in the first 3 weeks. You'd take 2-1 and then reevaluate, and then hopefully take that week off and come back with renewed intensity and vigor and venom for the opponent and come back at it. If this team goes 2-1 right now, you're going to be disappointed. Why? Because the loss would be at the hands of the Miami Dolphins. I thought if there was a loss, that it would probably come at the hands of the Jets last week. It did not, so there's no reason for this team not to be 3-0. And I think our expectations are going to continue to increase for this team, for this Patriots team. All of our expectations are going to continue to increase as the season progresses. The next game that the Patriots will play after Miami this week, after they have their week off, will be on the road at San Francisco. And depending upon what happens between now and, you know, a week from now, and we actually start kind of looking at San Francisco a little bit, your expectations are going to continue to be, well, that the Patriots should win. And those expectations are going to increase every week, whether they're fair or unfair. That is, I'm telling you, and you know it as well as you know your own name. That's exactly what will happen. And the expectations of the Patriots will increase around the league as well. And the naysayers will say, and you can book it right now, take this to the bank. The naysayers of the Patriots will say, well, who have they played? They're not playing anybody. They should win. Expect that to come out of Shannon Sharpe's mouth, and expect that to come out of Tom Jackson's mouth, and expect that to come out of anybody who you perceive to be a hater, if you will, or to be someone who has a negative influence on this team. That's what they're going to say. Well, who are they playing? They should win these games. You know, do it against the heavyweights of the league. Well, they will. As soon as they do, they absolutely will. But you can only play the games that are on your schedule. You know, this is what the NFL gave the Patriots. And like we've been saying all along, and we will continue to say, fact is that the schedule maker did the Patriots a huge favor. We didn't know it at the time, but the schedule maker did the Patriots a huge favor. And so this is the schedule you have, so just take care of business. It's all you have to do. That's why, you know, I was really semi-surprised at Vic Carucci's reaction yesterday and some of the other things that were going on, because I kind of got the feeling that, guys are contradicting themselves, and, you know, they want the Patriots to prove it, and, you know, but how are they going to prove it? They can only prove it by winning games, and if they're winning games that you think that they should win, well, shouldn't that in reality then, if you think they should win, shouldn't that put them up the ladder a notch or two? I'm more interested in what makes other teams right now better than the Patriots. Why are other teams better? That's what I want to look for. If you think the Patriots are this, that's fine. So what makes Dallas, what makes Green Bay, what makes Pittsburgh, what makes any other team that you can come up with, What makes them better than the Patriots at this stage of the game? That's what those are people that I'll listen to, and those are people that I'll take their thoughts and their analogies and their analyzation into consideration. I'll listen to that. I'm just, you know, kind of disappointed in the rest of the stuff. It just seems to be that, you know, some true colors are coming out of late. So pay attention to that kind of stuff when you see that happen on television. You're watching the pregame and the postgame and all the highlight shows this week. Just make note of it. And remember, you know, you heard that kind of stuff right here on the Playbook First, and we'll talk about it next week because we'll have a long time to talk about it. The practice participation injury report for this week is out. Today in practice, the Patriots did not have Eric Alexander, Lamont Jordan, Lawrence Maroney, or Kelly Washington participate. Jordan foot, Maroney shoulder, which we knew, Washington ankle. Limited participation in practice today by Vince Wilfork, who apparently has had his back flare up on him. So that will bear watching over the next 24 to 48 hours. Everybody else was out there today. Dolphins did not report any injuries today. So that is the injury participation report, although you know, maybe they just haven't released it yet, but they have not reported any injuries per se. So that's the latest from Patriots practice today. Jack sends his email. He says, by the way, Pat 17, Dolphins 6. He says, since Porter has been in Miami, they are 1-17. Why is he even talking to anyone? Probably a pretty good point, I would think. Why is he even talking? And we'll find out who's talking after the game on Sunday afternoon. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of Patriots Playbook for this week. Stick around, though, and I know many of you will be, because the Fantasy Lowdown with Brian Lowe, who just stepped into the studio, is coming.
Perfect timing,
huh? A couple of emails already waiting for
no
you here.
Kidding.
People have to know what you think about their choices this week.
Well, bad move on their part if they really need to know and they're coming to me. But all I'm trying to do is maybe help them out. If I hit 50-50, I feel pretty good about myself. No, it's all about throwing ideas around. And, hey, I think this guy should start. Who do you think? You know, and I'm no smarter than anyone else, but a little forum for people to chime in. And I guess if you
give
already
yourself
have,
some credit. How many fantasy leagues do you teams do you have?
I have two fantasy football teams.
Okay.
There have been a couple times where I had three. Boy, is that the limit, and that's a stretch. I mean, that's tough because you got to focus a little bit. You know, how do you focus on three? It's been a stretch. It's a struggle. Two is a good amount. Two is a good amount. You know, you can keep tabs on both fairly easily. You can kind of in your mind remember. I mean, you can't even remember who's on your team when you have more than two. So I kind of try to limit it to two, but. No, it's fine. Do you play? Do you participate at all?
I do not.
I won't be offended if you're not.
The only thing I do is I'm in a honestly, I have so, you know, I have so much going on in this time of year that it's hard for me to keep track of that, much less do fantasy
stuff.
You
never know when you're going to turn on the radio or TV and see or hear John Rook. You really don't.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not, to be honest with you.
I don't mind.
But here's the thing. I am involved in a survival league.
Oh, love that, too.
So what I do basically each week is I pick a team that I think is my best bet to win, and if I win, I move on to play next week. But if I lose, I am eliminated.
Done.
That's the nature of survival.
Exactly.
You're done, right?
Exactly.
So I'm in a survival league with some friends, and I'm 2-0, so I'm happy to say I'm still alive.
You know what? I'm in one of those as well. I'm 2-0 as well, and I've kind of come up with a pretty good rule of thumb on how to survive. Pick whoever is playing against the St. Louis Rams, and you're probably going to do okay.
At least for this, this year right now.
If you can keep the Patriots, you know, is it one of those where you can only use a team once?
Actually, no, it's not.
Oh, really? Okay.
Believe it or not. Now, that's what is normally termed a suicide league.
Oh, right.
A suicide league is someone that you can only use one time and then you can't use them again. Mm-hmm. Survival is just
whoever.
Survive in advance. Yeah. Pick a team and survive. And you'd be surprised how quickly you get knocked out. We have over almost 800 people involved in this particular league that I'm in. Last week, we lost 160.
It's so unpredictable.
I'm just like, how does that happen? I mean, you know what I did? I had the Giants last week over
the St. Louis Rams.
Yes, so thank you very much. So I took your advice.
It's so unpredictable. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, Seattle going into the season, they're playing, who'd they play the first 2 weeks? Buffalo and... And San Francisco.
That's the team that bit everybody last week because so many people took Seattle to beat San Francisco, and obviously it didn't happen.
You gotta find
just they're decimated by injuries.
Yeah, they really are. But those pools are fun
they're
because
fun. They're fun.
You're on the edge of your seat a lot of times on game day. That sometimes that
absolutely
means not a lot.
I think it gives you a great little kick to the season, and I understand why people play fantasy. I get it. I understand.
Yep.
I personally don't have time for it.
Yep.
My own son is in like seven different leagues. My 13-year-old and he spends all of his time doing this, which is great. That's fine. That's for him. It helps him get into the game, and he watches football on Sundays much differently now than he would have if he weren't involved like that, which I think is not a bad thing.
Yeah, it keeps a lot of people interested in the game, especially if your team is having a bad year. Let's say you're a fan of the Rams, and your team, by the end of September, it's going to be a hopeless season. It's a good way to keep involved in the action and keep tabs on the league, and certainly the league itself is certainly happy that fantasy football has taken off so much because it generates interest, and you might have, for instance, with this week, there's Atlanta against Kansas City, I think is one of the NFL games. Not really a game that's going to jump out on people's lists as a must-watch, but, if you have Larry Johnson on your team, you're going to keep tabs on that game. If you took a flyer on Matt Ryan, you're going to keep tabs on that game. Good way to stay interested in the league all throughout the season. So it's fun. Add an element to the NFL season, and we're here to help you out with your fantasy related questions.
All right,
so have your son call in.
I probably will at some point, and he may be listening, as the case may be.
Great.
He doesn't call you.
No, he doesn't. That's because he always wants to take the show over for me. If I ever bring him into the studio this year, you'll find out what I'm talking about. He knows. He thinks he knows more than I do, and honestly, he probably does. So that's the way it
might
works.
Be right.
B-Low, the Fantasy Lowdown. Brian Lowe coming up next right here on Patriots.com Radio.